Some time ago, a member of our church who first started attending at the movie theater told me about their first visit with our congregation. Said that they came in on a particular Sunday. They actually had gone to the movie theater to watch a movie and saw that we were having worship services there, and so decided to come to the worship service. They came in a little early, got one of the bulletins, went up sort of close to the top in the movie theater, started reading through the bulletin, and then they came down to the minister, and they quote said to me, as I was sitting there reading through the bulletin, he said, "Jimmy Jackson." He said, "Now that there is a black man." And that's what the person thought. Now, they never told me if they were disappointed or happy or what conclusion they came to when I got up to preach on that particular Sunday. And when they shared the story with me, the idea wasn't racial at all. You know, it's interesting, though, having the name James Jackson or Jimmy Jackson. I would guess that there are fewer white Jimmy Jacksons than there are non-white Jimmy Jacksons. But what's interesting is I've had opportunity, if people didn't know, like to talk to them on the phone, to do things on the internet, if they didn't know who I was, they probably projected something that they thought that I was. And the point of that is saying, it's interesting noticing the difference of how I'm treated, and then when people find out something different about me, how they treat me differently. Now, without so many words, I think perhaps all of us get the idea of that. The point of saying all of this, though, is, number one, we can work on ourselves. We're not really that good at changing other people. I think all of us are in relationships, or we work with people, we have people in our neighborhoods. We have spent perhaps a lifetime trying to change them or convince them to think different than they do. And probably there's a great deal of frustration in that. But the one person, though, that I can work on is myself, and changing how I think and how I approach other people. Now, this story, though, of the person, they still go to our church. It's kind of neat, they're not in the room right now. I didn't get their permission ahead of time to tell that story, so don't ask around too much. But the point that I want to make of that, though, is our tendency. I think all of us, we have a tendency to too quickly draw conclusions. You know, not just with people, but just about any circumstance. I mean, we think we have got something figured out almost instantly every time, and what we have figured out or the conclusion that we've come to, that is the right one. And typically, we're unwilling to change, even with new information being given to us. And so we have a tendency to allow externals to draw us to conclusions. Now, what we'll see today in chapter 11 of the story is this very thing happening over and over again, both by good people, but also some not so good people. Also, we'll learn something important about God and God's help to us, perhaps in overcoming this tendency. Now, last week with the story, we were looking at Samuel, and then we made the transition from the judges to the times of the kings. And we have the people coming to Samuel saying, "Give us a king." But notice the specific reason. Now, they try to make it sound good because they say, "Samuel, you know, your boys aren't very good. And so when you're gone, we just don't trust that your boys are going to lead us down the road that we should be going down." Now, already they had demonstrated they didn't really want to go down that road anyhow. But it sounded good. "So Samuel, your boys are not going to be very good leaders for us. We need a king." But specifically, the reason that they wanted a king is so we could look like everybody else. So we could be like the other nations that are around us. So to keep up appearances. It's interesting, Bob mentioning Black Friday in his prayer. And isn't it fascinating? Man, that just hits, doesn't it? That we spend more thought and time about planning Black Friday out than perhaps we did the worship service today. Or our time of giving thanks on Thursday. Now, no doubt we spent a whole lot of time visiting people, and we spent a whole lot of time preparing food and time eating food, watching football. But how much time did we spend thanking God on a national holiday that's been set aside for the very purpose of thanking God? We put more thought into Black Friday. And then think about how many of the purchases did we make on Black Friday? And if we didn't go out on Black Friday, how many of the purchases in the next week, while all the deals are going on and happening, how many of those purchases will we make with the intention of keeping up appearances? That we find something we want or that we have to have, but the reason that we have to have it is because somebody else has got it. You know, we already have a computer, but we want another computer. No, we want a little smaller computer, maybe a notebook or a tablet computer. You know, something that we can carry around with us everywhere. Everybody else has got one. We want a bigger TV in our homes. You know, and the list could go on and on of the things, but why do we buy those things? It's not always. But try to keep yourself in check as far as how many of those things do we go out and purchase or we have to have just for the purpose of keeping up appearances. Well, we move into chapter 9 of the story of Samuel and of Saul. The people ask for a king. Well, then God, he's going to provide them a king. And so we have listed there at the beginning of chapter 9, Saul's family, starting with Benjamin. So he's from the tribe of Benjamin. And then we go down a few generations and we come to Saul himself. But notice the description we have here. Saul, an impressive young man without equal among the Israelites, a head taller than any of the others. So this guy's like, what, 6 inches to a foot taller than everybody else. He looks like a king. Well, this is exactly what they asked for. God, give us a king so we can be like all the other nations. And then who in the world is going to say, well, you know, your king's actually better than my king? No, we want to say our king's better. You know, my king's better than yours. My dad, he's better than yours. My dad's bigger. He's taller. Well, again, likewise with these folks. Look at our king. Now we're somebody. You know, we're a nation just like everybody else. We have our own king. But when we move into chapter 15 of the story of Saul, we learn outward appearances, they're not enough. And you probably all of us have experienced that. That we draw conclusions based on outward appearances, perhaps we get our hopes up, and then oftentimes we're let down. So then the word of the Lord came to Samuel, I am grieved that I have made Saul king, because he has turned away from me and has not carried out my instructions. Samuel was troubled, and he cried out to the Lord all that night. So a new king was to be anointed. And so the subject matter of chapter 11, a new king. It says, the Lord said to Samuel, how long will you mourn for Saul? Since I have rejected him as king over Israel, fill your horn and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king. Samuel did what the Lord said. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, do you come in peace? Samuel replied, yes, in peace. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me. Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. So Jesse's sons are invited to come along. So Samuel encouraged this. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab. Now this is Jesse's oldest son. So now Samuel. So here's our first one in this story, the first of 5 people that we'll see as we go through this passage who very quickly jump to conclusions, but specifically what they do is they look at the outside and they draw their conclusions from what's on the outside. So Samuel, he looks at Eliab. Maybe Eliab looked a whole lot like Saul. Whatever the reason, though, Samuel sees this oldest son of Jesse and thinks, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. Now again, Samuel is probably one of the most faithful, consistently righteous people that are in the Old Testament. So if we find that we have a tendency to jump to conclusions too quickly, again, we're in good company. It seems to be that's part of the defect that we have as human beings, but we don't have to stay where we are. We'll see a path that we can go down in this story here. But again, Samuel's a good guy. He's a faithful guy, but he does like everybody else. He looks at Eliab. Eliab, he looks kingly. He looks like the one. But God says to him, nope, he's not the one. So then Jesse calls the next son. Abinadab and had him pass in front of Samuel. See, Samuel's a quick learner. But Samuel said, the Lord has not chosen this one either. Jesse then had Shema pass by. But Samuel said, nor has the Lord chosen this one. Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to him, the Lord has not chosen these. So he asked Jesse, are these all the sons you have? They're still the youngest, Jesse answered, but he is tending the sheep. Now Samuel's the first person, but then Jesse's the second person in the story. Jesse is told to call his sons in. Here's the prophet, the seer. Samuel has come to town. He has invited you and your family to dinner. Your family, they come out to eat with him. But you know, David, he's the youngest. He's little. He's kind of the run of the family. We're just going to leave him out in the field. You know, somebody's got to stay there with the sheep. You know, surely a family this big, they had some servants that could have gone out and watched the sheep. And their youngest son could have come in and joined them for dinner. But no, Jesse, we see how much he thinks. Again, just looking at the outside. Samuel's still a boy. Doesn't invite David. And I'm not sure how many times I said Samuel there, and I meant to say David. Did. But he doesn't even invite his youngest son, David, to come and eat this meal with Samuel. So again, Jesse's the second person who's caught in this story looking at the outside. And it's even within his own family that he commits this. Samuel said, send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives. So he sent and had him brought in. He was ruddy, with a fine appearance and handsome features. And so David, he had reddish complexion, probably had red hair. He had a fine appearance and handsome. So probably he's about 16 years old. He's a good-looking young guy. He probably has never had to work really hard. He's not gone into battle, and so he's not been hardened. He's still just young and a handsome guy. According to legend, this is in the Hawaiian Islands. It used to be that when people were going to get married, so a father, if he had daughters, the thing that he could count on is someday he was going to get some cows out of the deal. Now, to me, that didn't sound real fantastic, but perhaps at a point in time in Hawaii, this was a big thing. And the prettier your daughter was, the more cows you would get. And so a good-looking girl would probably get two cows, maybe three cows. A really, really good-looking girl may get four, and then there is supposedly a rumor that there was one girl one time that drew five cows. And so the guy shows up and he offers five cows for this one particular guy's daughter. Well, a guy named Sam Carew had two daughters. Now, his two daughters, the first daughter was shy and plain looking. Again, I don't know if that's politically correct or not. Randy Frazee told the story and I read it, so I'm just kind of sharing it so we don't mean any harm, at least at this point, to the oldest daughter. But she, I guess, was not the best looking girl. But then he had a younger daughter, and she was really good looking. And so the father dreamed ahead of the day that the oldest daughter, hopefully she'd get married. Maybe there'd be a cow in the deal, but still hopefully she'll get married. But the younger daughter, he was already figuring I probably will get at least three cows for her. Well, Johnny Lingo, a wealthy landowner, it was time for him to settle down. He was to choose a person to be his wife. And so he was going to come calling on this particular family. And so you can guess the first thought of the father was he's going to come and ask for my younger daughter's hand in marriage. But relatively quickly, Johnny let him know, no, I'm not coming for the younger daughter. I'm coming for the older daughter. He thought, well, Johnny's got a lot of money, a lot of resources. And so I wonder, you know, my oldest daughter that I'd kind of given up hope on, maybe I could get two cows or three cows. And he began to really dream and thought, could it possibly be four cows? And to everyone's shock, Johnny Lingo offered 10 cows for the older daughter. Now they got married. They went away for their year-long honeymoon. And when they returned from the honeymoon, everyone was surprised that this girl had turned into a strikingly beautiful graceful, poised, confident, self-assured woman. A woman who is worthy of 10 cows. And see, what happened here is Johnny saw below the surface. He saw a beauty that was inside of her. He saw her heart and who she is. He saw her true worth, and it made a difference in her life. God said that same sort of thing to Samuel in this story. As they're choosing a new king, after Eliab comes by, God has already rejected Saul. So now Samuel's looking at Jesse's sons as they come by, and the first one comes by and he thinks, this is king material. And here's what God says to Samuel. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And the way that the word is used there is it's not just his heart, but it's everything that the person is on the inside in contrast to their outer appearance. And so Samuel, you're looking at the wrong thing. Look inside the person, because that's where I look. Then moving on to verse 12. Then the Lord said, rise and anoint him. He is the one. So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. Samuel then went to Ramah. We're going to watch our video with chapter 11 and kind of tell this story and a few other details. David, though, is anointed king on this occasion. But being anointed king didn't mean he went and sat on the throne right away. It would still be a number of years that Saul reigns over Israel before David becomes king. But David has been chosen by God and has been anointed. And we've looked at two so far in this story, and there's still some others in this story who underestimated David based on his appearance. With the story of David and Goliath, David is sent down to visit his brothers to take them some food. Perhaps they needed clothing. Whatever needs that they had, though, he was sent by the family to go and to provide for his brothers. While he was there visiting his brothers, we pick up the story. David asking the men standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? The story of David and Goliath. We're familiar with that story. But before David goes out into the battlefield with the sling and with the five stones, he sort of has battles with a few other people in the story. First of all, his oldest brother, Eliab. We read, when Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the desert? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down only to watch the battle. So David's brother looks at the outside of David, makes accusations about David. He has no idea what David's like on the inside and what God is able to do through David. Anyway, David ignores his brother. David volunteers. We continue on. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you're not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy, and he has been a fighting man from his youth. Here's our next person, Saul himself. David volunteers. They've been waiting and waiting. 40 days Goliath's been coming out and taunting the people of Israel. Nobody will go out and fight him. David steps forward and says, I will go. But again, Saul, what does he do? He looks at the outside and he sees this young boy. He sees a person who has not gone into battle. And the point that he makes with David is, this guy, he's got quite a few years on you as far as experience in fighting. And see, there was a great deal of risk here, because the way this would work is the champion would go out and fight, and whoever won, that side would win the battle. And so if David lost, that meant all of Israel lost. If Goliath lost, then the Philistines, they lost. But again, Saul, just like the others in the story, is looking at the outside. Well, still, he talks Saul into it. David goes out to face Goliath. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." And there's our fifth person. A person who looks at the outside, comes to a conclusion based on the outward appearance of David, but the conclusion he comes to is so wrong, so far from reality. So five people in this story, from Samuel, who is a very good, righteous, faithful person, perhaps one of the most faithful in the Old Testament, to Goliath, one of the least faithful in God. And yet all of them do the same sort of thing. They look at David and they don't see what God sees. Samuel looks at him and sees a kid, a handsome kid. Jesse sees him as his youngest son, probably a spoiled brat, you know, in his eyes. A shepherd, not a warrior. Eliab, he sees David as his little brother, his conceited little brother. Saul says, "You can't go, you're just a boy. You're untrained. You don't have the ability to do what's needed." And then Goliath sees a small child, not a toughened warrior. All of them were wrong. Aren't you thankful that God doesn't do this sort of thing with us? Now, there's a lesson to learn here. One, just to be reminded of human nature and how easy it is for us to do this sort of thing. But then secondly, to be reminded that God is not any of us. God doesn't approach people like we do. And see, our goal in following Jesus is to become more like Jesus. And thank goodness God, when he approaches us, doesn't approach us like other people. Aren't you thankful God doesn't look at the outside, but he sees what's on the inside? Now, and let me be careful how I word that, because what we do, it is important. It makes a difference. Are you afraid that what's on your outside is an accurate reflection of what's on your insides? And that's where we can get into trouble. If we're not who we're supposed to be, if we're not who God has called us to be, or is shaping us into, and if our outsides do accurately reflect our inside, there's work to be done. But we've come to the right place. God has the ability to change us. But better than this, God has the ability to change our hearts. Are you letting God change who you are? This is something we're called to do all the time. We all know this. Not just to be Christians when we get together at church on Sunday, but to be people who are like Jesus all the time. He gives us the help that we need. His Holy Spirit dwells within us as Christians. We have his word. We have direct access to him through prayer. He's given us each other for his accountability. God can change us, and he desires to change us. The last thing that he gives to us that I want to mention is he gives to us the Lord's Supper. Time of communion, which we're about to partake, to look back and be reminded of what Jesus did for us. During this communion time, I'd like to offer an invitation. If you need to repent, to rededicate your life to the Lord, to give your life to the Lord, any decision you need to make, God can change your heart. He can change who you are from the inside out. He's that powerful if we let him. But he won't force himself on us. So why not let him? I invite you to come to the back. I'll be back there waiting as Bob leads us in our time of communion. On the table in the back, there are a number of invite cards. There are two different ones that are themed for Christmas. So if you'd like to pick those up, to use those to invite people to come with you to the worship services on Sundays. We're going to take a break from the story through the rest of the month of December. Also, 2 weeks from today, the young people will be presenting their Christmas program. But if you'd like to invite people both during Christmas time, but also tell them what's coming starting back in January, please pick these up on your way out today. There are a number of other things that are up on the screen. Probably the most important is just if your children are involved in preparations for the Christmas program, they're practicing on Tuesday evenings and also going over some of the songs and their worship times on Sunday morning. So just please make sure you have them here or at the office consistently. We'll meet this coming Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Also, the small group meets Tuesdays at 7 o'clock as well, and they are going through the story and have a video series that they're working on with that. If you have questions about that, please see Jim. This Saturday is the first Saturday of the month, so the men's breakfast and women's breakfast, both of those are taking place this Saturday. And somebody told me something, and I can't remember. Did somebody else have an announcement? I know Rosemary was supposed to remind me if I forgot June and Catherine. Oh, that's right. Thank you. If you're on the January setup team, but you can help us in the month of December and can trade, please see Charlie before you leave here today. He needs help. So that's what Joy said. No. Yeah, he needs help with that. So if you're on the January team, please see Charlie before we go. Okay. This time, please stand for our closing prayer. Praise team will then lead us in our closing song following this. Let's pray.